Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you all with us today. On the way to our program, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com. We can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner right there. Last November, I read a piece in the New York Times before I saw the movie Lincoln by Spielberg called In Spielberg's Lincoln, Passive Black Characters. It was written by Dr. Kate Mazur, who's an associate professor of history at Northwestern University. And it intrigued me, so I started reading more about it and read about the characters in the movie. Went back to my old interviews with Doris Kearn Goodwin about her book The Rivals, which this movie was supposedly based upon. Got in touch with Dr. Mazur after the first of the year to say we really need to talk about this other side of Lincoln, parts we're not talking about. So she joins us on the air today, along with Dr. Edna Medford Green, who is a chair of the History Department at Howard University, and Candy Carl, who is producing artistic director of the East Haddam Stage Company in East Haddam, Connecticut, and director of a one-woman show based on the life of Elizabeth Keckley, entitled They Call Me Lizzie, From Slavery to the White House. And Elizabeth Keckley was one of those three characters, along with William Slade and Lydia Smith, who we'll be talking about during the course of this hour and more. And Dr. Kate Mazur, Dr. Edna Medford Green, and Candy Carl, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Hello.
I appreciate being brought into the conversation.
I'm glad you all are here.
One to have.
Yeah, I think so, too. And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Join us on our Facebook pages, or you can even tweet us at Mark Steiner. We'll get to your thoughts and calls here, 410-319-8888, as we explore the other side of Lincoln. Kate Mazur, let me start with you. I think what you wrote and what you later wrote in the Chronicle of Higher Education were really kind of fascinating, and how film interprets history and really becomes staple in terms of how we look at different moments in our history. So just give us a brief overview of what after you saw the film, what made you write the piece for the New York Times?
Well, thanks. So I guess I saw the film. I had the opportunity to see the film early. It was in limited release the first weekend that it was out. It was showing in like one theater in each of something like 17 cities or something before it was more generally released the following Friday night. And so I just, luckily, a friend asked if I wanted to go that night, and I went. And to tell you the truth, I mean, and that Friday, the day before, a huge number of really, really positive reviews had come out about the film. And I knew the film was about Abraham Lincoln and that it was centrally about the passage of the 13th Amendment and that Daniel Day-Lewis was the star. And, you know, that this was really a movie about with Lincoln at the center of it. But I also sort of wondered and was curious about whether they would the movie would show or to what extent it would show the African-Americans who were part of Lincoln's life, who he and Mary Todd Lincoln knew well, the context of Washington, D.C., where they lived, which I had written about and know quite a bit because I wrote first a dissertation and then a book about Washington in this period of the Civil War and Reconstruction. And so I went into the movie, excited and with high hopes in a way for seeing something really, you know, cool. I mean, people who are historians, you know, we're just really happy to have history on screen. And I guess what I found, I just ended up feeling so disappointed in the movie, and I felt like it was an incredibly missed opportunity because even in a movie that's centrally about Lincoln and Lincoln's relationship to Congress and the passage of this constitutional amendment, all of which is kind of high politics, there were opportunities, and in some ways you could tell that the filmmakers and the screenwriter knew that there were opportunities to have some African-American characters that if you hadn't had black characters, it would have not been in some ways true to the reality of Lincoln's life in the White House, first of all. And yet the characters that they chose to represent, which made a lot of sense, William Slade and Elizabeth Keckley were in reality really important black figures in the White House and surrounding Washington. They did them in such a kind of unidimensional, way. And I acknowledge that, you know, there are ways you can read into how Slade's character is represented, or how Keckley's character is represented, that are, you know, okay, they're complicated. The actors did a really great job with what they had to work with. But nevertheless, I felt that it was really a missed opportunity to gesture toward the amazing civic life of Black Washington, to all of the very interesting and transformational things that were going on the streets of the city, in the churches, in Black philanthropy. And I was just really, really surprised that absolutely none of that was in the film.
When seeing Steven Spielberg's past work, I wasn't completely surprised, but I was disappointed. And your article really got to me. And Dr. Edna Medford Green, appreciate you being part of the show today.
My pleasure.
A great deal. And talk. Have you seen? You saw the film
twice.
Okay. And so I just begin to talk a bit about your sense of that history as well, and what you think that film did and what it missed.
I have to agree wholeheartedly with Professor Mazur. There were so many opportunities in that film, and they missed just about every one of them. I guess I was most disappointed with the fact that there was no Frederick Douglass. You know, how can you do a movie about African-American freedom, even though it's about Lincoln, it's from Lincoln's perspective, but how can you do a movie like that and not even have Frederick Douglass in a scene, and especially since Douglass had a relationship with Lincoln? And secondly, how can you do a movie about the 13th Amendment and not really talk about slavery? You know, you have a scene with the president's son playing with photographic plates, but you don't show a plantation scene. You don't show a contraband camp. You know, you have the president traveling from the White House to the soldiers' home, where he's staying in this cottage during the summer months, and he's passing at least one contraband camp in the morning when he's going to the White House and in the evening when he's returning to the soldier's home. And nothing like that is ever present in the movie. So I was very disappointed in terms of how African-Americans were portrayed or were not portrayed. And it doesn't mean that I didn't like the fact that they had Elizabeth Keckley there or William Slade or even Lydia Smith, but there was so much that could have been done and was not done. And we know that it's a movie, and movies are for entertainment. But the problem is that many Americans get their history from the media, you know, from popular culture.
Right.
And this was an opportunity to help them along a little bit, and it was missed.
And I want to explore these three characters in some depth and talk about that and what you said about Frederick Douglass. We had discussions about that as well. I'm going to raise some questions about that too. And Candy Carl, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
And I'm really interested in your perspective here as an artist, as a writer in theater. The Black character in the film that got the most play and the little play people got was Elizabeth Keckley.
It's really interesting to hear all of the different viewpoints from the general public, who know nothing about the topic, all the way to people who are professional historians, like your other guests, and people who know intimate details about it. And reading the blogs and my inbox and my email has been flooded as well with people asking about, in particular, of course, because of the show that I wrote and directed, Elizabeth Keckley. And coming from the perspective that I do with 25, 30 years in theater, and now 20 years in living history and bringing historical characters to a live theater format, I can see both sides of this. I can see that there is the creativity and the imagination that Spielberg has mentioned, as well as Tony Kushner have mentioned about, well, we weren't making a documentary. We were making a movie for entertainment. And I can understand that, but I cannot tell you how much I agree with the comments about the general public tends to get their history lessons from these movies. And therefore, it's my view that they have a lot more responsibility to make sure that the impressions they were putting on film are responsible ones. not only was the lack of Frederick Douglass an issue, not only were there missed opportunities. From a theatrical standpoint, I know the process of how many hours of film get made, and it all ends up on the editing room floor. Incredibly important scenes, incredibly important issues. And yes, they were trying to focus on these 4 months. But to have the subject matter be about this amendment and not having Frederick Douglass and not having just one sentence or two sentences, for instance, Elizabeth Keckley as portrayed in the movie, I cannot tell you how many people have asked me, so you do that show about Mary Todd Lincoln's maid, right? Well, she was never Mary Todd's maid. This woman lived through slavery and through her own skills, purchased her freedom, set herself up in business. She was an entrepreneurial woman. And all it would have taken in this movie is one or two sentences, shall we take you home, or how is business going for you today, Madame Keckley? Just one or two sentences. That's the simple version. What would have been even more powerful and what would have been a lot more resonant with the issues that Lincoln was facing, as well as fleshing out the experiences of the enslaved people in Washington, were the contraband camps. And from my understanding, he visited a contraband camp at least once. And because Elizabeth Keckley was involved with them, just one 30-second moment of him riding by and seeing her there with the contraband, handing out the blankets and the supplies that she had gathered people to her to bring aid and relief to the contraband camps. It's so simple when you look at it in that kind of a window of opportunity. And because they had so many things that they were trying to do with this movie, from an artistic standpoint, what we end up seeing is what they artistically have chosen. And I'm very disappointed in them because it on the one hand, it's a good movie. On one hand, it's very well acted. On the other hand, you know, I've seen it multiple times, and every time I go away feeling a little bit more despondent about how we have to now talk to people who are getting their history lesson from this movie instead of from history.
So one of the things that I want to wrestle with, I want our listeners here who have seen this movie, or even if you've not seen the movie, but just wrestle with this history at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on this, and we'll go to those calls coming in a few minutes. I mean, is the power of the people in it? I heard what you said earlier, Dr. Medford Green. One of the things I posited in this conversation earlier was, even if you took Frederick Douglass out of, even if he wasn't in this movie, I mean, he wasn't, but I'm saying, if you rewrote the movie so the other characters had a greater presence, I mean, the power of that to me would have been the fact that you had people like William Slade, who was Elizabeth Keckley, who were inside the White House, who, and as you wrote Kate Mazur, if you could rewrite some of the scenes, their influence and power could have come through. Because, you know, we build our world a lot of times around famous men, whether it's Lincoln or Douglass, but it's the other characters in history that also kind of make the history happen.
Well, one of the, can I
yeah, go ahead,
jump
Kate.
In? One of the things that intrigued me in general, and in this case in particular, is different ways of seeing people. So the perspective of Lincoln or a congressman visiting the White House, if that person had run into Slade or possibly Keckley, they might have thought, oh, that person is a black servant, and or, you know, that person is the person who will go get my gloves or go get me my coat. But in some ways that's the perspective on those characters that the film lets us see. But if somebody else were looking at Elizabeth Keckley, like let's say another member of her church, or a black bricklayer in Washington in that period, were talking to William Slade, they wouldn't be thinking, oh, that person is, you know, merely the person who gets Lincoln's coat. They would be thinking that person is a leader of my church. That person is helping to raise money to help poor people. That person might help me get a job someday. And so. I think it's that doubleness of the lives of the people who worked in the White House, or for that matter, the doubleness of the lives of a lot of people who have regular service jobs, but also have lives in their own communities that aren't even known in their jobs and their daily lives, that I think is really interesting. And so what the film does is position us as the kind of white visitor to the White House vis-a-vis these characters. But the film didn't have to do that. The film could have shown us, as Candy was saying, I mean, just the smallest things, like Elizabeth Keckley saying, well, I'm off to go to a meeting of my relief society. Or, I mean, there are really things that actually happened. For example, Elizabeth Keckley really did ask Mary Todd Lincoln for a donation for her relief organization, which was called the Contraband Relief Society. And Mary Lincoln wrote, because at the time they were in New York City, Mary Todd Lincoln had cause to write her husband a letter telling him that she recommended that they give money to Keckley's organization. There's documentary evidence of that. And, you know, so first of all, this isn't stretching the imagination. This is not going out on a limb in terms of what actually happened. And also, all you would have to do is a little bit of this and a little bit of that to kind of remind the audience that these characters are much more complicated than just, oh, a servant who, you know, makes a living being in a kind of servant position and doesn't have anything else going on. I mean, I completely agree that, you know, this is, and I really kind of reject the argument that a lot of people made that, oh, you must be calling for a PBS documentary, or, you know, how could you have had this? This is a movie about Lincoln. I really think those responses are pretty spurious, because there's no reason why that, on that level of, like, small gestures, that could not have been done.
So, Edna, I can hear you trying to get in. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. You know, it should have conveyed the idea that Lincoln did not operate in a vacuum.
Right.
There were people of color around him who were influencing him. They may not have done so directly at all times, but certainly Elizabeth Keckley was influencing the president through Mrs. Lincoln. And you have someone like Frederick Douglass, he meets with Lincoln 3 times, and so someone would argue, well, how much influence could he have had on Lincoln in that regard? That's true, but Douglass is also having influence on Lincoln through someone like Charles Sumner, who was a senator from Massachusetts, mm-hmm. because Sumner had read everything that Douglass was saying. But we need to remember that there was African-American agency. Black people had ideas about what was going on, especially free black people, because with the ending of slavery, it elevated their own status. It wasn't, they may have been free people, but they were not equal people. They didn't have equality of opportunity because they were seen as being attached to a servile race. So that 13th Amendment meant as much to free black people as it meant to enslaved people on some levels. And so, but the movie does not even bother to look at anything like that, because it was like what black people were thinking or doing just didn't matter.
And you take people like William Slade, as you wrote about Kate Mazur, who was a leader and founder of the Social Civil and Statistical Association. He was also written about in other books, and people like that Lincoln suffered from insomnia and would walk the halls. And, the man he would talk to was William Slade.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a history book that was written, it was a book called My Fellow Americans, Presidential Addresses That Shaped History by James Humes. But one of the things in that book that pops out is that he talks about William Slade and talks about Lincoln walking around when he was writing the Emancipation Proclamation, talking to William Slade. How does this sound? How does that sound? What do you think about this line? And those little scenes like that, that if anything to kind of bring out the power of these black characters would have changed the kind of the not just the nature of the film, but how people walked away from that and what they perceived about that history.
Exactly.
Yeah. If I could just jump in for a second, because one of the things that I see repeated a lot as referencing the movie is Tony Kushner's use of the language when Lincoln says to Elizabeth Keckley as they're standing on the porch that he does not know them. He does not know black people. He does not know them. And
right.
I found that so difficult because you walk away thinking that, oh, he lived in a different sphere. But it's just, as Dr. Medford Green said, and just as we're agreeing, there was so much going on, and he could not possibly have been isolated from it. he had to have known many more African American and Black people and enslaved and free and contraband and people that were coming from all over throughout his life, not only just in Washington, and to lead a general populace to believe that he was working from a place where he didn't really know them was doing such a disservice not only to their lives, but I think to Lincoln, because I think he was much more involved than we give him credit for. And the other thing that is very important to keep in mind when you're talking about simple solutions to these clarifications for the movie, there was a curfew. Even if you were free, there was a curfew in Washington City, and you had to be, unless you had a special dispensation, to be a cabbie or someone who needed to be out after 10 p.m., you had to have a special dispensation to be out after 10 p.m. if you were a person of color. And that's just a golden opportunity. Can we take you home, Madam Keckley? I know it's after curfew. I mean, simple sentences that could have really shown, I don't want to call an ignorant audience, but an audience that doesn't know the details like we do. We're very ensconced in it.
That's
the thing that just drives me to distraction, because millions of people are going to walk away from this movie just like they did with Gone with the Wind and think that's the reality of history at the time.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on how we view history and what we do with it and the movie itself. And, Doc, you're on the air.
Mark, thanks so much for taking my call. And I refuse to go to the movie because I asked most everyone who went to it, can you answer my concerns? And I call it the two D's and the two C's. And the two D's is, did it discuss Frederick Douglass and Stephen Douglass? Stephen Douglass was one of the debaters that Lincoln had when he was running for Senate, because during that debate, it was clear Lincoln was opposed to social and political equality. He was opposed to it and stated such. The two C's were colonization. Lincoln was very much in favor of colonization, argued with blacks about colonization, because his process was he thought that if we had colonization, it would resolve the issue of slavery. And then the other issue, I'm very glad you have some very astute panelists, not that you don't always, but the two C's is colonization and curfew. There were curfews there. That blacks argue with Lincoln about. So I told folks, if you can answer the two D's and the two C's, if those issues were covered in the movie, then I'm willing to see it. But otherwise, it's just another fictional type of program that we take as history. And that's the scary part, because the ladies have said it. We take this as history, and I'm saying the two Douglasses should have been in that movie, and I'm being told by folks, the Douglasses aren't there, and colonization is not even discussed.
Well, let's wrestle with that for a minute. I mean, it just in terms of the film itself and what was in it, what wasn't in it. I mean, this was not about the debate period with Douglass. It was about a very small moment in the history around Lincoln, which is built around when they voted around the 13th Amendment, that kind of month or two of battle that took place.
Mm-hmm.
So Douglass wouldn't have been in that.
Well,
but go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Who's this?
This is Kate.
Kate, go ahead, Kate.
So one of the things that people have been saying is, by choosing this particular slice of time, we're not getting the Lincoln that was an outspoken advocate of colonization. He had this famous meeting with black delegation in 1862, in August 1862, when he proposed that they lead their people out of the United States and go settle somewhere else, and that's very famous or infamous. And there's a Eric Foner's recent book on Lincoln kind of makes the argument that it's pretty persuasive that Lincoln's feelings and thoughts on the capacity for the United States to be a biracial nation, a democratic nation, Lincoln evolved. By the time we meet him in this movie, he's more or less given up on the idea of colonization. And so by not treating an evolving Lincoln, but just giving Lincoln at probably what you could say is his most progressive moment at the end of his life, what turns out to be the end of his life, we don't hear that story. We don't know that he ever thought those things. We don't know that he ever changed. And, you know, again, I mean, this isn't the kind of thing that they, even if they had picked that slice of time, they could have done a flashback to that moment, right? It's not, I mean, you can do whatever you want with a movie.
So, I'm going to interrupt for just a minute because we have to take a quick break. We'll come right back to your thoughts and to Dr. Edmund Medford Green's thoughts and Candy Carl. Don't go away as we discuss Lincoln, the other side of Lincoln. How could we have redone this movie? How could it have been done that showed the history that we need to know creatively? We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way back to our conversation, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland's public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction and safety, and the educators' programs and services that make our schools a national leader. That's MarylandEducators.org. We are joined here in this hour by Dr. Kate Mazur, Associate Professor of History at Northwestern University, who wrote a piece in the New York Times about Spielberg's Lincoln and the passive black characters were written into this movie. Dr. Edna Medford Green, Chair of the History Department at Howard University. Candy Carl, Producing Artistic Director at the East Haddam Stage Company in East Haddam, Connecticut, where she directs the one-woman show based on the life of Elizabeth Keckley, entitled They Call Me Lizzie, From Slavery to the White House. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Come to these calls in a moment. I'm sorry, Kate, you were in the middle of a thought when we went to break.
Oh, I was mostly finished. I was just going to say that it's also the case that Frederick Douglass visited the White House in the winter of 1865, and he actually went to the inaugural reception after Lincoln's second inaugural in the spring of 1865. So actually Lincoln and Douglass did have one of their encounters during the period when the movie set.
And I think that this is the kind of stuff we're talking about here, Edna Medford Green, when we create history on the screen, and what Kate Mazur is writing, what Candy Carl was talking about earlier, that what we see in the popular culture is what stays with us. So there's a power there.
Absolutely. And so that's why it was so important that they do this right. Instead, what they did was they're presenting to us is that image of Lincoln, who is the martyr who sacrificed himself. You know, he's the sainted Lincoln that has been with us for the last 150 years, actually. And so what they choose to do is they take the last phase of the struggle over the 13th Amendment, and they insert Lincoln in it because it is in that period that Lincoln looks best. When this first struggle started in late 1863, Lincoln was not really on board. He didn't think it was really necessary at that point. And in fact, when it first came to the House of Representatives, it was defeated. It was passed by the Senate the following year, but it was defeated in the House of Representatives. So what we're seeing is that second time that it's introduced in the House of Representatives, and at that point, Lincoln is very much behind it. But what about all the struggle that went on before that? People who don't know anything about that history will think that from the very beginning, it was Lincoln who was pushing this, not the abolitionists and not African Americans. So once again, African Americans are cut out in that way.
Let me open our phones here again at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts. If you've seen the movie or not seen the movie, we'd like to hear your thoughts on this. And we're going to kind of play with some ideas that it came out of conversations I've had and things I've read that our guests have written about what scenes could have been included. We haven't talked about Lydia Smith. And I'm going to get to Lydia Smith and Thaddeus Stevens because it's a very critical piece in our history that until that movie, I didn't know anything about Lydia Smith, so I went and did all this research on her, so I would know about Lydia Smith. And we're going to get to that, because she's a very important character in our history and in his mind and in his life. So 410-319-8888, Africa, you're on the air.
I was told that the police department, you know, was developed by slave catchers. That's when it was first developed. The police of today?
So we're talking about the movie Lincoln.
No, it's connected with slavery. It's connected with Lincoln. The police of today were first developed through the slave catchers.
Okay. Africa, you still there? Okay.
You hear me?
Yeah, but I'm trying to get you. Yes, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Get my point. My point is the police of today was first developed with the slave catchers doing slavery.
Okay, right. And?
Is that true?
Is that true?
This came from Minister Farrakhan.
Well, I think the police were in the United States before, just for catching slaves, but clearly that all of the armed folks in the South and their militias were there to keep slaves in check and to make sure slaves didn't run away and to keep slavery in power. There's no question about it.
Why would Minister Farrakhan say that?
I have no idea. Okay, Africa, thank you.
May I jump in real quick?
Sure.
This is Candy. I'm fascinated by the amount of interest that this movie has garnered, not only from historians and those of us who are involved in it, but the general public. And on the one hand, I have to be very enthusiastic that the thing that's going to happen is exactly what happened to you. You didn't know about this person, so you went forward and wanted to know more about Lydia and who she was and that part of her life. So I would urge that first caller to actually go see the movie. I encourage everyone to see the movie so they can actually speak from the experience of experiencing the movie, and hopefully it will launch people into more discovering of the people in this movie and won't just walk away and think of history from the perspective of that two and a half hours and that's it. I mean, if we can get people talking about the subject and involved in looking into these characters and seeing what the real story is behind them, not just the Spielberg and Tony Kushner story behind them, then is that worth the lack of historical accuracy? And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people struggle with. Do we go forward and promote something so we can launch further discussion about it, even though it's going to make a very difficult job for me? Whenever I tour with my show, they called me Lizzie from Slavery to the White House. We're actually heading to Petersburg, Virginia in February, and that's where a great deal of some of the scenes of the movie were shot. We're going to be at the Sycamore Rouge Theater. And when I travel with the show, I always have a Q&A after the program because it's incredibly important to not only have the experience itself, but to have the follow-up. And with movies like this, I just am very pleased that there's been so much follow-up, even if some of it is stemming from the fact that we're all incensed that these characters were not actually fleshed out more, that there were, you know, real huge gaps. And I was thinking the same thing. If we can get people more interested in these characters based on this movie, then is that worth the backpedaling we have to do to get people up to snuff, counteracting what was missing, what was erroneous, and what was misleading and assumptive? I mean, well, I will spend the next 10 years of my life explaining to people that Elizabeth Keckley was not Mary Todd Lincoln's maid.
Right. I would doubt that. Unfortunately, I think most people won't do that. That's part of the problem is that it takes, because people just don't do that. They go to the movies to be entertained, not to research the movie when it's done.
Right.
Edna, go ahead. You were about to say something?
No, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. People are not going to read. They're not going to go out and look at primary research. They're just going to take to heart that this is actually what happened. And they'll go home and be entertained. And that's the unfortunate part.
Well, I think part of the reason why, and this goes back to something that Edna said earlier too, is this movie, for a lot of people who are going to see it, for a lot of Americans, this is not a challenging movie to us. This is not a movie that is unsettling. In fact, it kind of reaffirms a lot of things that we want to collectively believe about ourselves. So it's not going, and, you know, I've definitely, people who have argued with me have said, and that's what Hollywood does, so you shouldn't expect it to do anything else.
Well, we should, though.
You know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, or even around the margins, right? I mean, this is not a filmmaking team that really needed to worry all that much about, you know, taking a little bit of a risk by, you know, oh my gosh, it's so risky to give a little bit more agency to the black characters, right? I mean, so I think, you know, I don't mean to sound conspiratorial when I say this, but I also think that, you know, there's an ideology or a set of ideas that are at work in this movie that are very well accepted, and that those have to do with the notion that the source of the good things in American history is white people and great men, and that, you know, that's not a tough pill for most Americans to swallow. So when we see a movie that confirms what we already suspect or sort of think, even if we don't know we think that, it's not going to make us go on the web. It's going to make us sort of say, oh, what a great movie. How fun. I learned a lot, you know. So that's one of the reasons why I really wish the filmmakers had risen to this challenge a little better.
And I'm actually, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that somebody like Tony Kushner didn't rise to the occasion.
I'm sorry, but I think that's part of it, too. These are not people without resources. These are not people that are just, you know, starting out in their careers. These are people who have done monumental things. These are people we have higher expectations of. And when you go to see a Tony Kushner-written a play or a movie, and it's directed by Steven Spielberg, your expectations are a lot higher than they normally would be for a run-of-the-mill kind of production company. And I think that's why the impact of what was lacking is so strong for me personally. I'm struggling on two sides of it, being in the business, being someone who wants to have that artistic integrity associated with movie making and live theater and telling the stories as best as we can. I mean, none of us can go back to 1865 and live it firsthand. So we all have to do deductive reasoning. And when you're in the arts, you have to accept a certain percentage of imagination or filling in the blanks, because we don't have those things. But that doesn't say that we can't be really good at it, especially if we have the kind of resources and talent that Tony Kushner and Spielberg have.
And I think, too, you have to have a few people in the room to remind them that the narrative needs to be broader. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm looking at the credits, I'm wondering, you know, who in the room, you know, tugged on the coattail and said, wait a second, you know, we don't have this scene or that scene. And if they did say it, why didn't they listen to what was being said?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I was struck when I think of Spielberg, and I think, again, it was Kate Major's piece that made me think of this, that even when he did Schindler's List, who he didn't talk about was Schindler, was Mrs. Schindler,
right?
Who was really the emphasis behind what happened, not him. So, I mean, and so that stuff happens all the time to women and people of color in our Hollywood films. And I think that's part of the problem. And one of the characters in this, I'll talk about for a minute, is Lydia Smith, who, as I said, I wasn't even aware of her until the film. And then when I saw the film, and, you know, I love Epatha Murkison. I think she's an incredible actor. And saw this character she was playing, and then looked it up and started reading and realizing that here was this woman who was whose mother was African, whose father was Irish, who was born free, had two children by a free man, and then ended up living with Thaddeus Stevens. And the interesting thing about Thaddeus Stevens, when he was asked about people pushing him, whether they were in a relationship, his line was, even though they raised her two kids and his two nephews together and ran the Underground Railroad out of their house in Pennsylvania, his line was, I don't think there were any children begat under my roof. Was the way he answered. He always did a circuitous answer, and that was his answer. But you know, one of the things that Dr. Medford Green it's fascinating about this woman is the power she had. She became this businesswoman. She was there all the time in his life.
Absolutely, and it seems there was a partnership there. And
right.
What the movie did was to reduce her to his lover.
Yes,
that's all.
Right.
You know, and that was not the important part of this moment. You know?
Right, right.
And it's just, and it's typical once again of the role that the way African American women are seen You know, she could not be, he could not see her as his equal. They had to show a bedroom scene. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mind them suggesting that there was a relationship.
Right.
That's fine. But when he came into the house and he hands her the document,
mm-hmm.
he could it could have been a warm embrace, a kiss. What it
yeah.
did not have to be a bedroom scene.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
It looks like she started out as his servant and ended up in bed with him.
Yes.
The other thing is that they didn't have to show him bringing the document home to her, where, in my view, it's basically the sort of metaphorical, like, gift of freedom
mm-hmm.
of
right.
Thaddeus Stevens to this black woman.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence that that happened, and there's not, you know. So basically, I mean, they didn't have to put that in. They put that in because it was kind of, I don't know why they put that in. But you know, they could have shown their relationship in a different way, for example, by showing Stevens consulting with her before he went off to the session of Congress. You know, what should I do? How should I vote?
Mm-hmm.
That would have shown, like, a more, you know, of a partnership. One thing that's interesting about the scene with her is that she and Thaddeus Stevens play a role in the infamous but also really important movie Birth of a Nation. And the Lydia Smith character in Birth of a Nation, which was from 1915, which is a movie that makes the Ku Klux Klan the hero of this whole period, she's portrayed as one of the biggest villains in that movie. She and Thaddeus Stevens are this, like, evil interracial partnership, and everything that they stand for is what the movie
mm-hmm.
doesn't
What's
like.
Wrong with the world, yeah.
So I think that, you know, there's an interesting thing about movies here where, you know, the filmmakers put in this kind of turning Birth of a Nation 180 degrees on its head by showing their relationship but kind of giving it the approving look, like, look, this is great. He's living his principles. He really believes in equality. It's not, they're not villains. They're kind of the good guys. And so it's like a reversal and a reference back to that. But I agree that the way that they could have done that, I think that's a really interesting gesture, but not have it be her the recipient of this gift in this sexualized, you know, way.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump in really quick.
Go ahead, Edna, please.
It's very important, the point you guys are making about the balance and the perception of the balance between people. And as far as Elizabeth Keckley is concerned, she and Mary Todd Lincoln were exactly the same age. They were both born in 1818. By the time Elizabeth Keckley was becoming her confidant and her friend, and of course in the movie we're talking about 1865, they've had 4 years together. These women in the movie were not perceived or even... you can't, if you know nothing about them, you cannot walk out of the movie thinking that they were equal in any measure. And yet, to each other, they were much more of the same thing they're talking about with Thaddeus Stevens and Lydia Smith, is that these were partners. I see that in the greater world outside of the room that Elizabeth Keckley and Mary Todd Lincoln are in at the time, perhaps perceptions would be different. But if we could see them in the room together having a conversation, we could have seen an equality of
mm-hmm.
intellect, equality of struggle, of sorrow, of all these wonderful things that make life so rich for both of these women. And again, we keep going back to the missed opportunity. To see these people as equals would have been on that level of humanity. Because, you know, irregardless of the slave narrative, irregardless of the stereotype that we want to get rid of, that from my perspective, you know, that stereotype that she was her maid, irrespective of all those things, if we'd just had a scene where they were talking to each other as human beings, as two women of the same time period, of the same background, which they were. I mean, Mary Todd grew up surrounded by slaves. Some of her favorite people that she wrote about were women of color in her life. And she turned to Elizabeth Keckley out of all of the people that she could have turned to in her life in incredibly important moments. So the bond between these two women was something that was not only not developed in the movie, but it wasn't even touched on. And I agree wholeheartedly. We're not talking about having to rewrite the movie. We're talking about just what Kate just said. As he's walking Thaddeus Stevens walking in the door, handing over the piece, having a conversation or having a brief scene earlier on, or as was suggested, having them have an embrace as two individuals is so much more powerful than constantly reinforcing the stereotype that, okay, here we are in bed. They had a sexual relationship. Well, we all know that, you know, black women had sexual relationships with white men. I just wanted to scream. I just wanted to jump up and scream.
So let me, somebody's just calling in. I want to bring into our conversation here. Chancha De Vega, who has written about this, also written by Kate's article. He writes for Salon and Alternet. He has his own site called We Are Respectable Negroes. And has had some thoughts on this. And Chauncey, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, go ahead. You did a lot of commentary on Kate Mazur's article.
I did. I mean, it was just a wonderful, wonderful article, so it's great just to be able to even be on the same show and chat with her.
Hi.
Nice to hear your voice. And I always like to play script doctor, so when I see somebody else actually sort of thinking critically about these issues who has professional expertise, who can actually sit back and say, okay, here's what we were offered in the film, but here's how it could have been, you know, perhaps made a little bit better or improved.
So, I mean, I think that it would be interesting to see how people, what you started to do in your piece, and your piece, Kate, I was thinking Edna Medford Green would be a great exercise for students to learn this history and rewrite the scenes.
Mm.
If you take those scenes back to your class and then say, now, here's the history, here are these people, how would you write the scene?
What a great
that
idea.
That would be interesting.
I mean, that's a wonderful, wonderful suggestion. And I actually teach courses in cultural studies and the politics of popular culture. And when I teach my courses on film, I always try to explain to students that a film is not about the moment that's being depicted historically. It's about it's a product of the moment in which it was made. So Lincoln, yeah, it's about the 19th century and the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of the Civil War, but it's really about our politics of the present. And the other thing that's really important to emphasize with students when you're talking about these issues is that a film is a series of choices. Steven Spielberg, as I'm sure you guys discussed, could have made any number of movies. He could have made any number of different choices. So we don't go to the movies to learn history, but we can go to the movies to learn something that we didn't know before, and as a beginning to actually start doing some real critical reading and critical thinking about the events that actually transpired.
And what do you think would be the – have your students talked about this at all?
Yes, in fact, the second time I saw it with 8 of my students.
What happened?
And we had dinner afterwards, and no one liked it. they all had problems with how African Americans were portrayed in the movie. And they had problems with the idea of setting it up so that Lincoln once again gets all the credit. He gets all of the credit for the Emancipation Proclamation. He gets all of the credit for the 13th Amendment. And we understand that he was certainly central to the Emancipation Proclamation, and he did play a very prominent role in the 13th Amendment. But he doesn't do it alone. He's not operating in a vacuum. There are other people who are equally important to the emancipation story. And so my students objected primarily to that.
And one of the things that as we're talking about this in Kate, is that, you know, the movie itself was, I mean, I think it was a brilliant film. I mean, as just pure filmmaking, the acting was brilliant, the sets were brilliant, the costumes were brilliant, the script was well written. It was an amazing film, just purely in terms of film. And that's the danger of it, because those are the things.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it looks like it's so great. It must be true.
Right. I mean, that to me is the thing that bothers me the most, because I walked out of that movie loving the film, initially just about the film itself, just watching Daniel Day-Lewis act, you know, watching them all do their pieces, but then reflecting on the movie and thinking about what people walk away with. I mean, it's like, you know, and as we said earlier, I think it was you, Edna Medford Green, said earlier, when you walk out of a film, that's the piece of history you take with you.
Absolutely. But I think, I think it was Chauncey said, you know, I think this is really right, and I teach history, and I haven't taught classes about film, but I'm thinking about it. I think what we can really do as teachers, anybody who's a teacher, right, at any level, I have kids who are in elementary school. I mean, I think one of the most important things you can learn ever is how to critically engage with the things that are coming at you. everything from ads on TV, you know, how are they mobilized, how are they trying to get you to want to buy this thing, to, you know, how is this movie making you feel good, and then what are the messages that it's sending you, and what's getting eclipsed or left out. I mean, these kind of things about critically engaging with not just like a primary source in a history class, but critically engaging with the world, you know, so that we're not just swallowing it down whole without thinking about what it is that we're being asked to swallow. I just think that, you know, gosh, there's probably nothing more important than that.
And Chauncey, we're almost out of time. I know you just called in, but I'd like to get your thoughts on that as somebody who looks at the creative world and how we portray it.
I mean, the challenge number one is most folks don't want to critically interrogate their own pleasure. So the challenge there is getting folks to turn their brains on instead of turn them off. So they go to movies and they don't want to think. They don't want to think about television. They don't want to think about popular culture. And as I say in my classes on day one, one of the primary ways that folks learn political values in this society is through popular culture. Most of them are not reading newspapers. They certainly don't follow complex issues of public policy. But they can go to a movie like Lincoln and get a misrepresentation of history. Or alternatively, they can go see a movie like Django and think that those events actually transpired and that, you know, black folks are rising up getting guns all over the South, although there were many slave rebellions, and then a man can run off with his wife, destroy a plantation, and there'll be no consequences. So we always have to sort of push students to think critically about everything and say, hey, you know, turn your brain on instead of turning it off. Get off of Facebook. Think about technology and the types of political lessons and the way that technology filters reality. But very, very quickly, I'm sure you guys probably touched on this, but, I mean, this is not a new problem for Spielberg. I mean, if you go back to Amistad, if you go to Saving Private Ryan, he has a narrative where he's always fixated, and he's not the only one, on white savior figures. So on one hand, you have atrocious abominations of movies such as The Help, which is an abomination, thoroughly eviscerated by historians and others. But that movie teaches political lessons, too, right, about sort of black agency and black subjectivity. Saving Private Ryan, right, they don't show any black soldiers on D-Day. That's a decision by Spielberg not to do that. Amistad is about white savior figures. We can even talk about movies like Mississippi Burning as another example of this white savior trope. So Lincoln is great filmmaking, but horribly problematic in terms of its politics and history.
Well, I want to thank all of you. This has been really fascinating, and I'm glad you could join us here at the final minutes here, Chauncey De Vega, and we'll link to your blog, We Are Respectable Negroes, something you should read. Dr. Kate Mazur, we'll be linking to her stories as well. Thank you for being here and with the piece you wrote in the New York Times that got me started anyway.
Thanks.
And Dr. Medford Green, it's been a pleasure to meet you on the air. I hope we meet in person. I appreciate you bringing your insightful thoughts to our airwaves.
My pleasure.
And Candy Carl, and we'll be linking to your work, They Call Me Lizzie, From Slavery to the White House, and where you'll be playing that play. Thank you so much for joining us as well.
Well, thank you for bringing us on. As I said, it's a very important topic, and I'm glad that you've brought it to the forefront.
Good to have you all with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right.
Maybe we'll do a show. We can act out some scenes the way it should have been done. Remind you, on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. In the next hour, we look at pesticides in our environment, in our land, in the places where our children play, and what some legislators want to do about it and some who don't. Stay with us.